and welcome to another episode of The Good Journeys. My name is Robert.
And this is Tori.
We're your hosts. And today we have in studio, and actually we're in a new studio today. I don't know how many people have recently, with all the COVID stuff going on, we actually sold one house and moved into another house. And moving is a crazy experience. That's all I can say.
Oh my gosh. If I never have to do that again, it would be great.
It's just insane. It's just, you pack everything up, you get the moving company, you do all the stuff you have to do. And then comes months later, you're still unpacking from 2 or 3 months previous.
Oh my gosh. We're living in the land of boxes here.
Yes. Oh, by the way, where's the microphone? Where's this and that? You're trying to find things for the studio here. And that's more important than to get set up in the house, I guess, for
there
this time.
There you go.
But it's kind of hard to find things. We finally got our act together and got it all put together. And we're doing another wonderful episode. And today we have in studio with us, we're not doing a remote, we're actually in studio, we have a friend and fellow magician, Jeff Azell. Jeff, welcome to The Good Journey.
Hey, you guys, what's going on? Very happy to be here. Happy to be in your new studio, checking it out.
That's right.
And we're doing something a little different, too. Jeff is actually taping this because he does a lot of stuff on LinkedIn and other sources, Facebook and stuff, and he likes to do a lot of videography and stuff, and so he's actually filming this. So if you're on Facebook or LinkedIn, you can find Jeff Azell there and
check it out.
Check it out,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah,
definitely indeed. So, question for you, Jeff. I've known you for many, many years. I remember when you used to have your magic shop in Burbank and stuff, and go in there and buy supplies, and we talk magic, of course, about the Magic Castle in Hollywood, California. And for those of you who do not know what the Magic Castle is, the Magic Castle is the home of all the magicians of the world. It's a private club. Founded by William and Milt Larson back in 1961. And it's basically a home. It has about 5,000 members, of which about 2,000 roughly are magician members, both professional and semi-professional. And then you have about 3,000 non-magician members. And if you've ever been to Los Angeles and you get a chance, try to get into the Magic Castle. Great place to go.
Yeah, totally. A really cool place. I say anybody who's anybody in the magic community has gone through the castle at one point or another. That's the place.
Yep. And you never know. It's like, we were talking one day and Neil Patrick Harris was the president of the castle for many years.
Yep.
And Neil, very approachable, wonderful, wonderful gentleman. He and his partner would be at the castle all the time. And they were filming, the TV show, How I Met Your Mother, and he'd still be there. And he was actually president of the castle during that time. And just really, really super great to talk to and socialize with, and other celebrities as well, too. But you have magicians from Doug Henning to Mark Wilson and to, Penn and Teller. All these people have somehow been affiliated and been part of the Magic Castle.
They're all woven in there.
Yep.
And the really cool thing with Neil Patrick being in there, I mean, he genuinely loves magic. He really, really likes magic. And you'll see when he does like his, I don't know if he did like the Emmys or Grammys or something like that, he would incorporate magic into his opening deal.
He did.
Yep. That was always cool to see.
He did indeed. Yep. Well, Jeff, here's a question for you. You're a magician, and I'm sure we have a lot to talk about. You also do a lot of motivational talk in business as well, too, and use magic as part of your motivational speaking and working and just general talks in general. How did you get into magic?
Well, I think getting into magic, I think magic gets into you. It's what really happens.
Yeah.
And when I was a little kid, I would watch, and you mentioned Doug Henning on television. There were a lot of magicians on TV when we were kids, and there's still more on TV now. But Doug Henning, when I was a kid, was the one who really, I think, drew me in because of his style and the way he treated his appearances on TV. He was so casual and so easygoing and so fun to watch. It wasn't like a really stuffy, better than you type of show. It was a genuinely, here, look, and enjoy this. And I liked watching him. He was just so much fun to watch. And that's kind of what drew me into magic as a little kid. And then he was doing one episode where he would, I think every magician will kind of do this on the television, is the cutting the lady in half trick. And that blew my mind. I was 8 or 9 years old at the time. I was like, this is just insane. So I wanted to try it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I was all in. And so I had a little brother. He's 5 years younger than me. He was either, at that time, he was either 4 or 5, and I was 8 or 9. I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. And I got these. We grew up in Southwest Detroit, and we're just sitting there, and my mom had just bought this refrigerator. So the refrigerator box was in the basement, and it was empty because the refrigerator was, of course, up. We're using it. But we had these carpenter's horses. And so I put the refrigerator box on the carpenter's horses and told my brother to crawl in. Those boxes are very sturdy, by the way. Very, very sturdy. Oh,
no. I'm afraid to ask where this is going.
Yes. Well, let me tell you. We had a nice little set of tools downstairs. So I had one of those big hand saws. And so it was in the living room, by the way. I just brought this up to the living room and just did it right there. And it was just me and my brother. And I said, you got to watch this. This is going to be incredible. He saw the same show I did. So he knew what was coming up. And he's like, let's go. Let's see how this works. I just start sawing away. And this cardboard box dust going everywhere, you know. It's just creating a big old mess on the floor. I don't think that was probably my biggest worry. It would have been the cardboard mess. I think in the end, the bloody mess would have been the real big worry.
The little brother mess.
But my mom walked in literally just in the nick of time. It was like, it was meant to be for her to walk in at that moment. She's like, what are you doing? Screaming. I said, Mom, you got to see this. It's the best. I saw this on TV last night. And it's amazing. I just kept going. She's like, no. She stops me. And later on, she's, you know, has to explain to me, here's what's going on. Yes. But if just imagine this. I mean, this is my little brother. I mean, he was going to be my half brother if this thing went through. He was gonna be, you know, if it ended up in the hospital, he'd have been in room 2A and 2B.
Oh,
so, you know.
2B or not 2B.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, luckily she stopped me, and we're all alive today for that.
Now, does your brother hold that over you?
No. He's, the craziest thing is he'll still do some things that I ask him to do.
Jeff, I'm pretty sure that you're the reason why people have to put disclaimers on things. This is, do not try this at home.
As a 9-year-old kid, you probably are the reason. Yeah. Why is that rule on that box? Because that 9-year-old in that living room that one day with that sawhorse and those refrigerator boxes.
Yeah.
Now the professional magician, now performing at San Quentin Prison. You know?
Oh, man.
So, I mean, that was literally how you got in to magic.
Wow.
Trying to cut my own brother in half.
In half.
For profit. Who even knows at that point? I didn't know about profit at
the
time.
And no audience either.
Yeah, no audience. I was like, just going, like, this is going to work. It's going to be amazing. But,
and no film of it.
No film of it. I wasn't that good at that point.
Yeah.
Clearly not at the magic either.
Oh, man.
Good thing you've improved.
Yeah, thank goodness, yeah.
So a lot of Band-Aids you're probably keeping with your magic kit too, in case now for those
cuts. Leaky, bloody moments.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, you know, one of the things that you talked about was too, when we were talking before the show, was you were in the Navy for many years.
Yeah.
And you were the cook for the captain, I understand.
I was the captain's cook on a battleship, USS New Jersey, one of the most decorated battleships in the U.S. Navy at that time, for sure. But the way I got to that was, previous to going in the military, while I was in a high school, I put myself through cooking school in the evenings. So I went to a culinary school for 2 years because I like to eat. Let's be honest. And I knew at some point I'd have to take care of myself. So I wanted to make sure I was able to cook something okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I got pretty good. I wasn't the best, but I still think I was pretty good at that time. And I got into the Navy because I went to interview for a cruise ship, to be a cook on a cruise ship.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, hey, have you ever had the experience of cooking for 1,500 people or 2,000 people at a time? I said, no. I go, but it's the way I saw it, it was just simple math. You take a recipe, you multiply it out, and that's what you got to make and cook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
fairly simple logic.
That's what I thought, but they weren't going, like, yeah, you know, we want somebody with more experience. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. So I'll join the Navy. I'll get the experience. Boy, did I.
Yeah.
I ended up in the main galley at first, and on the ship we had 1,500 guys. So you do 4 meals a day. You do breakfast, lunch, dinner, and then a late evening meal called mid-rats. And this basically midnight rations is what that is. It's for the guys who couldn't make it to dinner because they're on watch or standing duty or whatever it would be. And there was just so much going on in there. I just didn't feel that my skills were being used the way that I've been trained. Mm-hmm. So I went to the senior chief of the mess and I said, hey, here's what I can do. Do you have anything different in here that I can do? I just basically showed him my credentials and showed him a couple of examples. And he goes, I got the spot for you. Just says, follow me, walked me up to the captain's galley. He says, here's your new spot. I was like, wow. That's it? That was easy? Yeah. And then I just became friends with the captain. He became an admiral for the Navy. And it was a really, really great experience. So when we'd go cruising around the world, everybody in the ship, and at least not everybody, maybe 1,500 people, but a lot of people knew that I did card tricks. Mm-hmm. So even the captain knew. So when we'd go around the world and we'd bring on dignitaries from other countries, like technically their governors or their presidents or whatever it would be, come on, and I'd cook for them. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, the captain would say, hey, why don't you come out and do a couple tricks? Okay, cool. I did it. And got to literally perform around the world as my start in the Navy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know something. We talked about this before. The movie Under Siege with Steven Seagal. Yeah. You know, instead of being the Navy SEAL, you're the magician.
I was the Navy magician.
Navy magician, yes. You can handle all the bad guys coming after the battleship.
I made them vanish.
So now you were in the Navy about 10 years, roughly, you said, right?
No, 5 years.
Oh, 5 years.
So I did 5 years straight from 87 to 92. And 10 years would have been cool. But if I did 10, then I would have stayed for 20 probably. But I remember at the 5 year mark, my mom telling me her closing line, where she's putting on her closer's hat saying, you need to stay in. Here's her closing line. You get great medical benefits. I go, Mom, I hope I get sick a lot then. I go, but that wasn't my goal. I didn't want to be a cook anymore. Mm-hmm. I was like, I enjoyed it. It's kind of a thankless job because you can put out this amazing spread for the crew, but if you forget the mayonnaise, oh, you're going down, bro. You didn't get the mayonnaise. Where's the mayonnaise place? Did you see all these steaks and lobsters and sandwiches, the salad bar? Did you see that dessert bar? Yeah, but you didn't bring the mayonnaise. Oh my goodness.
Oh man.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, yeah. I decided around that time that I don't think I want to cook for life, but I enjoyed the time. And I would never give it back, the time that I had cooking for the captain, the admirals, and all the officers. That was a great time. I really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah. So when you came out of the Navy, then where did you go from there?
So I got out of the Navy, and I had to make a decision. Number one, I was born and raised, like I said, in Detroit, Michigan at that time. I spent a three-year stint in Tennessee in the deep, deep, deep hills. But the majority of my time was raised in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And I had to decide, do I want to go back to Michigan? Because the military, once you get out, they'll pay for you to get all the way back home. They'll send all your goods, all your whatever you got. Or do I want to stay here? Mm-hmm. And it was literally like we were out having a picnic, basically. A ship-wide picnic, playing softball. They brought a gigantic beer truck where you just sit there and just no charge, just drink and eat hamburgers and hot dogs and play baseball and whatever. Just sit out there and get a suntan, whatever you want to do.
And they didn't make you a cook for this event?
No. it was all brought in.
Nice.
And the weather was perfect. It was probably like 75 degrees out. It was a nice breeze. It was on the water. And it was the middle of December.
Wow.
And all I'm thinking of is in Detroit, they are freezing their everything off right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm here just comfortable. And I said, I can't go back to Michigan.
Yeah.
I was done. I said, cooked, I'm here. We're good. Mm-hmm. So that's what I ended up doing. But once I got out, I needed work. Mm-hmm.
Done work.
Just because now the paychecks instantly stop. The government says, well, you're out. We're not going to pay you anymore. Uh-huh. You got to go find something, boy.
What's the old joke? Work is the curse of the working class?
Yes, exactly. So I had a friend who was working at a place in Long Beach, California called Long Beach Honda when it was still on Long Beach Boulevard. And he said, why don't you just come sell cars? Try that out for a minute. And I was like, what do you need to know? He goes, tires, engine, door handle, ignition. Show it to somebody, take them for a spin, and if they want it, they buy it. Okay, cool, I could do that. I go over there and I start doing that. And I tell people now, since this was back in basically 92, 93, I said I've been in the car business so long that I've watched the original O.J. Simpson car chase go above me on the freeway while today everybody else is just watching documentaries of the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
But I stayed in the business, and that was my bread and butter for even to today. And that's really been my glue to just business and sense. But it also allowed me time away because the car business is semi-fluid, I think. You could leave one dealership and be at another place in one day if you wanted to, literally. So I was able to go and do magic. If I wanted to go work on a cruise ship, I could do it. If I wanted to go do some motivational speaking, I could go do it. And I did that for a little bit. So, I just had a lot of fun with that.
That's neat. Now, how did you decide to get into motivational speaking?
It was money. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Because it pays well.
Yeah.
And if you do a good job, it pays very, very well. I was doing one show and I had hired an assistant at one point to help me get bookings and things like that to follow up with the customers and reach out and things like that. And I said, here's my fee, here's the percentage I'll pay you, and we'll go off of this and see how you do. And she got me a few of these nice gigs, and the motivational speaking one was doing fairly well. And when you go and do these talks, it's not like doing just a straight magic show, because you're not. Mm-hmm. You're finding out what are the pain points of the business, what do they want to talk about, what do they want to really address, what kind of crowd are they addressing, who in their group are you addressing? And you kind of tailor your show and just make it work with what they're trying to go after, and just really put a sharp arrow's point on and go get it.
Yeah. So is it mostly like motivational as far as sales and business success and kind of that target?
It was mostly, and it seems to be a lot of motivational things are mostly directed towards sales teams in a sense. Mm-hmm. But I remember doing a real big one for Caterpillar, and they brought all the people in from Canada and all over the USA, and it was out in Riverside, and we did a big old deal out there, and that was kind of fun. But that was also for their business owners as well as their sales teams. Mm-hmm. So that was a nice mix of people.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So, you just kind of throw yourself in there, you just do it.
Yeah.
You deliver.
Now, how do you get those kind of gigs? Like if someone who's listening to this podcast says, oh, you know what? I've always thought about going into motivational speaking. I think I'd be really good at that.
Phone calls.
No idea how to start.
Don't be afraid of the telephone.
Okay.
That's number one. I mean, they'll always tell you the phone is the heaviest thing and the hardest thing to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't pick up the telephone to start the conversation with a company, hey, you have this trade show coming up, or hey, you have this event coming up. Do you have keynote speakers? Do you have this? Just start asking the questions. And a lot of people, honestly, they're just afraid of the rejection, and they don't want to make the phone call in the beginning. So if you're afraid to make the phone call, just hang it up now.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
that's the interesting thing about sales is that people think, oh yeah, I can sell anything, but the second you put somebody in front of them, they turn into a stone character. It's just like they freeze because it's not necessarily about not knowing the product. It's sometimes in dealing in sales or marketing, it's about how you present yourself, how you communicate with yourself.
Yeah.
That's the biggest key of selling anything is the marketing and being ability to say something properly.
And it's no different with magic or performing or being a comedian. You're still selling. You're up there selling yourself to a crowd of people because you want them to laugh with you or applaud for you. And you're putting on this whole deal.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So everything, literally, I wrote something on a forum one day. I said, nothing happens unless a sale happens first.
Interesting. Yes.
I said, without something being sold, then you don't have the opportunity to repair something that may be broken. Like say you have a camera. If you don't sell the camera, you're never going to have anybody to repair the camera. If you don't have somebody to repair the camera, you have nobody to buy the camera.
Mm-hmm.
you know, it's a big process. And then somebody replied with, well, sadly, that's not true. I'm like, okay, well, you keep thinking that, but if you don't sell it, you're never going to have anything. You sit on the shelf and then you don't have a job.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you've always incorporated your magic in with your motivational speaking and as mm-hmm. well. So really you've kind of taken all of your talents and, you know, used them to your advantage in everything that, yeah. that you do. That's if you could, you know, maybe like whip up a little, you know, appetizers or something where you're, you know, you'd have it all.
You're right. I mean, I think that's the one thing that with food is probably the only thing I didn't really do anything with magic other than make the food disappear that's in front of me.
There you go. See, you did.
But that's really, I think the only thing I really haven't worked magic, quote unquote, with, you know, doing air quotes. Hey.
That's right. That's right.
But magic has been like a nice little crutch there at all times. If I'm out of something, I can go do magic.
Yeah.
And I'll make some money with it.
You know, one of the things that if you go to your LinkedIn page, for example, even your Facebook page, you show quite a few film clips from inside your dealership. Matter of fact, you're working now for a Dodge dealership in
Buena Park.
In Buena Park. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and give a plug to the dealership.
Yeah, it's Premier Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, Buena Park, California.
Hey.
Okay.
Welcome.
Yes. And I've seen a lot of your clips where you turn around and you are, all of a sudden you'll be talking to somebody and all of a sudden it's like, hey, that cards appears out of nowhere and you're off right. doing tricks. One of the most successful, in my opinion, sales techniques to get somebody, you know, relaxed, calm, and enjoying the buying process.
The whole experience.
Yeah, exactly.
The crazy thing is early on when I was showing, because I love to bring in a customer mm-hmm. and have fun with them, right? But there's an etiquette that I had to figure out, and there's a timing that I had to figure out when was really a good time to introduce a magic trick in a car deal. Mm-hmm. And I was doing finance in the finance office at one point, and I would stop halfway through doing the paperwork just to let people relax a minute. Y'all want to see a quick car trick? And I found that that's not the best time to show it. Because now people could think, and you don't have to fast forward your thinking. They could think, maybe this guy's trying to trick me into doing something else. Maybe he's trying to trick me to sign something. I don't know. Mm. So I stopped doing it during any of the actual business portion of doing it. But when it's done, a lot of people in the dealership will talk like, yeah, this guy does magic. Hey, this guy does a trick. Make sure he does a trick for you. You know, whatever it'll be, mm-hmm. right? And they'll come up to me even during. And I'll say, no problem. Let's finish this up. And then afterwards. Because now the focus switches to a magic trick and they don't want to talk about a car deal anymore. And I'm there to literally, it's a business. We're here to sell cars.
Yeah.
And I know that if I sidetrack it, that's not going to be good because that customer can say, great trick. Thank you very much. We'll call you later. Uh-huh. Whoa. Hold on. Let's get back to the paperwork.
Yeah, exactly.
I know that's something similar because my years in the automotive industry and stuff. And when you're in the finance office, turn around and all of a sudden come and say, hey, you know, okay, magic man, do a trick for us. And you're in the middle of trying to close them to sell them one of the aftermarket warranties or a factory warranty or the perma plates or the different aftermarket products and stuff.
Yeah, 100%.
There goes your train of thought down the drain.
And their train of focus as well.
Exactly.
Once it's broken, it's broken.
Yeah.
It's hard to put it all back together.
Yeah, but I think it's a really good idea to do it at the end because people leave feeling, people love magic and it just makes people feel good.
Because you know what happens after they've signed all their paperwork? 9 times out of 10, their car is not finished in the detail shop yet.
Right.
And so now they're just waiting.
Yeah.
And then the salesman typically will, unfortunately, it's just the way it goes and it sucks sometimes, but they kind of vanish.
Right, right.
You find them in the lunchroom, you find them in the smoke break room, you find them in the detail shop, maybe, who knows when they should be there with the customer, but a lot of the guys will be there, but there are some guys who won't. Mm-hmm. And I try to swoop in a little bit and do a couple tricks if I'm not too busy.
Yeah.
And have some fun with them and, you know, and just tell them, we appreciate you coming here. Thank you very much. Have some fun. And we video it. And then we post it up on all the big TVs in the dealership. And the customers love it. They come in, they're like, oh, I'm on TV. Yeah. So
you have your entire sales staff doing magic. They disappear.
They vanish, yes. Yes.
The vanishing act.
Yeah. They call it, they vanish. That's vanish in Spanish.
Just bought a $35,000 car and the salesman's gone.
Yeah. Poof, look what we've done. Yeah. Poof, be gone. Be gone.
Well, I have this piece of paper and there's no car here all of a sudden. You know?
Yep. So, and then you had Chad, you're doing all this stuff. You've got all this stuff going on. And then you are hit with a health challenge. And now you have a lot more to deal with on your plate.
We have some things in our plates. Me and my wife, 2 years ago, she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, which was at that point, I think, stage 3, 4. Stage 3. She's holding her fingers back there.
That's right.
And so the doctors, they go through all the things they're doing with her. They remove all, you know, she goes to the surgery to remove all the girl parts and do her chemo and do her radiation, things like that. And during this time, I'm taking care of her the best I can as well. And also trying to keep up my macho man.
Uh-huh.
Don't worry, it'll be all good. But during that time, I had this hernia that was bugging me for a long, long, long time. But I didn't want to do anything with it because I knew a hernia surgery put you down for a couple weeks too. I was like, oh, you know, I think I'll wait. And when she's done and we got her all good, get her all clear, then I'll go and I'll have this thing checked out. So I go in after she gets her all clear. She gets her what I call the certificate, cancer-free, woohoo.
Woohoo! Right?
And then I go in.
Jeff's wife is smiling here. She's off camera and off mic. We actually asked her if she wanted to join us. There's, no, I'll kind of sit over here on the side here and watch.
That's
so. So I go in and get my stuff checked out. And because I just told the doctor, I said, here's what's happened. I got this space down here. It just really hurts. And it's just not horrible, but it's you know it's not normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just turning 50 at the time. I said, it's also time for my colonoscopy. Why don't we just do this all at once and just get it all checked out? And we did my colonoscopy, and when they woke me up, they said, you're not leaving. We're going to have to do emergency surgery on you because you had colon cancer.
Oh,
what?
No.
I was like, what?
Oh,
I felt the same way.
Yeah.
The shock on your faces is like just like mine.
Oh, my God.
So they reel me into the hospital, and they set me up to do surgery that evening, and then it actually gets postponed for like 3 days, and you can't eat anything prior to the surgery, I think like 12, 14 hours, whatever the number is. But every time they postponed it, they said, well, we still can't feed you.
Oh.
So I was eating whatever the IV was in me and then whatever
ice chips.
Exactly, yeah. Right.
Oh.
I became an ice chip pro. When they'd come in, can you get you anything? Cup of ice chips.
Yep.
Just the feeling and the satisfaction of chewing something.
Yeah.
Was good enough for me. I was like, and it was just ice chips.
Could they put a little snow cone flavor on it?
I wish. Yeah. I had one nurse that gave me a little bit of apple juice and put it on just for flavor. And I was like, I love you. You're awesome.
That's good.
So I had my surgery. So therefore now we both at the same time, we have cancer about 2 years ago. And then, so I get my all clear after I go through my stuff and she has her all clear and we're just trucking along. And when you have cancer, and anybody who's had that, they understand what I'm going to tell you right now. Every 3 months, you have to have your blood test because they check all your levels, make sure everything's good. And we had checked something with her, with Fanny, and ended up to her cancer came back.
Oh no!
And that's what she's going through right now. So she's been going through chemotherapy again, and she has to go through chemotherapy every 3 weeks for the rest of her life until they figure out what they can do to help it from coming back.
Mm.
And every 3 weeks for life, that's a long time.
Yeah, seriously.
You know, they'll give you a choice, though. They say you don't have to do it at all. You could just die.
Oh.
That's not an option.
They don't really say it like that. But that's certainly another option. But, you know, of course, we're rooting for the chemo. Let's go. Let's just keep going this thing. And every time you go, it knocks you down a little bit, you know, because it wears you out. It does you physically.
Oh, yeah.
But right after she got her diagnosis again, then my blood test came in, and it also went wacko.
Oh no.
And so they said that mine also came back, but mine, it was colon cancer. And after they even removed about 12 inches of the colon at that time, they said the little cells are the ones that get you, the ones that are hiding. And they could travel anywhere in your body. And these traveled to my liver, my kidney, and my lung.
Ooh.
And so the most of it was centralized in my liver. And the kidney and the lung were really tiny spots. So they immediately started me on chemo right away. And so I did six long rounds of chemo, and each session for me was about 9 or 10 hours each day. A lot.
Oh, that's brutal.
They would be doing like a lot of people do like three hours, I think. I think that's normal.
Yeah.
But they had so many things they were putting in me. They're like, we're throwing the sink at you, bro, because this came back as stage four, and we got to make sure we get you and got to take care of this. I was like, all right. I said, I trust y'all. Whatever you say we got to do, I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they scheduled the surgery. So they were in June 10th, which is also Fanny's birthday.
Oh.
That was the day of my surgery to remove half my liver.
Oh. I would say happy birthday, but that's not quite a...
Well, you know what was on the menu that day? Yeah. Liver and onions. Hey, all right. So they took out half my liver that day.
Pass the ketchup for the liver and onion.
Yeah. Right, exactly. I got to the hospital like 5-something that morning. I think it was 5-something that morning because they had to be there 2 hours before surgery. And then they IV you up, and the last thing I remember is just being wheeled into the room.
Mm.
I know that I was awake longer than that, but when they put the sedation in you, you forget stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
Clearly I forgot stuff because I only remember being transferred from the gurney to the operating bed. Mm-hmm. That's all I remember.
Ooh.
And then I remember waking up at about 9:30. Surgery's over. I'm in ICU. Mm-hmm. And, I'm thinking, okay, it's been a long day. I'm resting.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I look at the clock. It's 9:30. It seems a bit dark. So I know it's a long day because the new surgery is going to be about 8+ hours already.
Oof.
So as I'm thinking, okay, 9:30, it's 9:30 night. We're good. She walks in, Fanny. And I go, what are you doing here so late? She goes, I've been calling them and they said, you're having another procedure. And she goes, and nobody will give me answers. And I go, I had surgery this morning. Of course I had a procedure, a lot more. But she goes, it's not June 10th anymore. She goes, it's already June 11th, 9:30 in the morning.
Oh,
so I lost the whole day. I slept that entire time, didn't even know it.
Yeah.
And I was so confused. I was like, 9:30 in the morning. I was like, how is that even possible? Mm-hmm. I just thought I slept, it was 9:30 at night because it was dark enough. It made sense to me. There was some light time, but I was like, I don't know. But to have a visitor coming at 9:30, I thought, why are you here so late?
Yeah, yeah.
Because she loves me.
She does.
So, you know, just going through our rounds now. And so literally, we're a married couple. And when they say married couples should do more things together, I don't think this is what they had in mind.
Oh, no.
No,
you know, no. But, taking trips.
Right.
You know, playing tennis or something. You know.
We took a trip, okay.
Yeah, really. Oh.
Down to Cancer Central.
Oh my God. That's a little too much togetherness, you guys.
Right. We try to handle things with humor, you know, because that's what we do. That's how I do it. And she certainly falls in place with that one for sure. She has some fun with it with me. Because you can go a totally different way.
Yes.
You could be the pity me negative Nelly all over the place, but there's plenty of that everywhere. I wouldn't add to it.
Yeah.
I might as well just have some fun with it.
Yeah.
And if you see any of the posts I make, I'll put some stuff out, but I won't be like negative about it. I'm like, yeah, this is what's going on. Check it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that you've always had this vibrant, you still do. You have this vibrant attitude of life.
Mm-hmm. AA batteries.
Yeah. You're the Energizer Bunny of magic here. And your energy level is just up. And I remember when we talked, we talked about doing the podcast before your surgery.
Yes.
And you were, you know, we were talking a little bit and you were just so up and bubbly. You said, yeah, I'm going to go through this and, you know, no big deal. And we're going to make it work and stuff like that. And that's always been your nature.
I remember that conversation too.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, no big deal. I said, just give me, I'm going to have the surgery real quick. Like no big deal. Like, we're just going to go in there, going to chop out the liver. You're going to be fine. Don't you worry about it. None. And then as soon as that's done, I'm going to call you back and then let the chemo start up and we'll do this interview. It'll be awesome. Let's go.
Uh-huh.
I didn't care about anything else. Like, yeah, let's just go have some fun.
If not, you want some great drugs before that surgery, I guess. Right. I don't know.
Oh man. Chemo will knock you down. And whether it's great or not, oh my goodness. It is crazy though. It is crazy.
Yeah. Well, I know you were saying like that you lose the feeling
of
the tips of your fingers and
right.
Makes it tricky for a magician.
As we speak, I can't feel my fingertips.
Wow.
I can't feel parts of my feet, my toes for sure. And the toes part's really weird on the balance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're just trying to just step or walk or stand still, if you're closing your eyes to dry your hair, whatever it is, you start to go, woo, 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 you know, just start to be a little loopy. Like, all right, hold on, make sure the walls are here. I can still hold on. But it's just part of the deal.
You brought up saying about your fingertips, you know, in magic, for example, if we're going to do, let's say, a false count or a subtle pressure to to steal a couple cards as we're doing something. I'm not going to give away how certain things are done, but there's a certain pressure and feel that you do, and the fingers and how you move your hands in unison, you know, make the illusion work. And without that feeling, the fingertips, I can only imagine what you must be going through trying to.
I have to retrain my hands, and I'll play with cards every day, just because I have to retrain my hands on just the different pressures it takes to hold a pack of playing cards. Because if you press hard enough, you'll feel something.
Yeah.
It's not much, but you feel it's there, right?
Yeah.
So I was doing a trick at the doctor's office just the other day, and I was spreading through all the cards, and they picked a card, put it back in the pack, and I started shuffling them up, and they just all fell to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you can cry about it, or you can laugh about it.
Exactly.
I'm like, there's your card. I go, I promise you, your card's down here somewhere. This has now just become the floor show. Yes. Thank you very much.
Oh.
Good night.
Yes.
52 card pickup game. Right.
And we all had a good laugh about it, because that's just what I do. No reason to go any other way. And I went down and I picked up all the cards and I did another trick for them. And then I, of course, had a successful trick.
Yeah.
What is some of your favorite magic you like to perform?
Anything. Okay, so I'd say there's steps in magic performance that determines whether it's really magic or not. And the steps on the early time of your performing are what you think you can do as a person. Like, look at me, I'm so amazing. Look at these tricks and look at these cool flourishes and these cards are flying everywhere. Aren't you amazed? And that at that time is your magic. That's what you believe is real magic. But then as it goes further down and you mature in your performance and you get better, the real magic happens when you actually get a reaction, a smile, and you affect somebody else.
Yeah.
In the way they think. And that's where the real magic, in my opinion, really, really happens without being too deep on it. Mm-hmm. But I love doing, if I can do something and have it happen in their hand, that to them was real magic.
Yeah.
And that's some things that they'll never forget. They may not remember your name, but they'll always remember how you made them feel every single time. So you get a choice when you're doing your trick. You can make them feel like junk, which I've seen some magicians do, which is horrible.
Yeah.
Or you can have fun with them and make them leave them with the lasting impression that they're going to just love forever. And they'll never, ever forget you to a point. Like I said, they might not remember your name, but they'll never forget your face and how you made them feel.
Absolutely.
You know, interesting, you know, doing grand illusion, for example.
Yeah.
I love grand illusion.
Love it.
No question at all about it. You know, close, you know, like a lot of magicians, they always close with metamorphosis, for example.
Yeah.
Great closing illusion.
Pendragon, metamorphosis.
Yes. Oh, yes, exactly. You know, Charlotte and
Jonathan.
Jonathan, yeah, yes. And, you know, the thing is that to me, even with the grand illusion, the close-up always draws me back.
My favorite.
Because it's that simple. You know, so many people say, you know, oh, you're using a gaff deck. You're using something that's fake. And my comment goes back, and I'm sure you make the same comment. I'm just using a bicycle 808 poker deck of cards. You know, here, you know, I buy them at Costco or I buy them at the market or whatever.
Buy them in bulk.
Yeah, buy them in bulk, and they're just a normal deck of cards. And as a magician, you know, we hone in on our craft. We're constantly practicing. How much time do you spend doing card tricks? I mean, you said you're retraining now, but
a lot.
Yeah,
honestly, I mean, As many tricks as I love to do, the cards, I've said 100 times, they're in your pocket. They're so easy to carry with you. It's either that or rubber bands. Mm-hmm. You put a rubber band in your wrist or cards in your pocket. Mm-hmm. Two of the easiest props in the world to carry with you. And as much as I do it, and I do that a lot with the card tricks, it just seems that it never gets old because the audience is always fresh, always new. You're always talking to somebody different. And even if you show somebody something that said, dude, show me that again, I just show them a different trick anyway. Mm-hmm. Because they're like, no matter what you show them, it's still going to be fun and amazing.
Yeah.
Jeff, absolutely. Unfortunately, I'm a 3-pack-a-day guy with cards. You know, I haven't gotten down that 1-pack yet like you do, but one of these days I'll be down to 1-pack of cards.
No, I mean, I've gone through some cards. And if you know, traveling...
Oh, yes.
Traveling on cards is not very nice to cards sometimes because they strangely enough, depending on the weather and the, and how the humidity is, they warp, they bobble, they become a stack of something that looks like it's been soaked in a thing of water and left on the end of a piano for a week.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, you have to be able to be able to play with that, or just go buy a brand new stack. On those days, you're a 5-pack-a-day guy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I guarantee it.
I know that years ago, one of my mentors who used to own a magic shop out in Orange County, he would always say, use Porter's grip, you know, for your hands. You know, gives you that little sticky stuff that kind of helps you with different flourishes or card tricks that you're going to be doing, false counts, whatever it may be. And you know, the funny thing is, when you travel, you're right. Like, we're in Florida a lot. We're on a lot of cruise ships. Mm-hmm. You know, I find myself using a lot of different things, or I have to buy a deck of cards while I'm there in the destination, mm-hmm. and pray that the humidity hasn't taken the sheen or the finish off the cards, even that sealed deck.
One thing that, almost to what you've said, when people say that it's a trick deck or it's that or the other, I'll start off a lot of times with the pack of cards. And I'll say, here, I want you to take them, I want you to shuffle them up, I want to make sure that you're happy with the pack. But I'm going to tell you something else. Everything you see me do, I can do with anybody's pack of cards. So if you see me do something here and you bring me a pack of cards tomorrow, I'll do the exact same thing all over again. And that kind of settles it a little bit, because it's just true. Not to say that I'd never use a gaff of any sort, because sometimes those are fun. They're very visual. Right. They're very cool. I've even invented a few of them. But I prefer overall just to use a straight pack of cards, mm-hmm. with no fear of ever having. I want to be able to hand it out here. Check them out. They're yours. Exactly. I'll give them away here. You can have them.
Yeah. I used to have a little gag they used to do where somebody would say, you know, oh, you're using a gaff deck. And I said, no, I'm not. I said, but why don't you use a gaff deck? And I bring out, they used to sell these political cards with all the politicians on them, a pack of 52 cards. Mm-hmm. And you open the cards up and it'll have like George Bush, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Obama, whoever it may be, but they're all the different congressmen and senators. They're all political cards, you know, from the ace all the way up to the king and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I said, yep. I said, here's my gaff deck. Here's the phony baloney deck that I use. And I had them all the politician cards.
That's all my phony baloney stuff.
Yeah.
Do you remember a show when we were kids called Celebrities of Magic?
Oh yes.
Okay. So I think Doug Henning was a host of one of these shows, and he was, right? And Happy Days, Marion Ross was on one of them. And this is a very good memory for me that I've always loved, and I want to share it with you if you don't mind. I was watching that show as a kid, and I remember specifically he was doing a double sawing in half. Mm-hmm. Two ladies, two boxes. One box was like all yellow. The other box was all pink. And the lady in the yellow box, she was dressed in all yellow, which would be Marion Ross. And then the other lady, I just can't remember who the other lady was, and I apologize, dressed in all pink. And she's in the pink box. And he cuts them in half, and he switches the legs, puts them back together. So you have a pink bottom, yellow top, and a pink top, yellow bottom. Opens it up, and their outfits have also changed. Wow. And I thought that was really, really cool. Well, fast forward like 20-plus years, there's a place in Santa Monica called Magicopolis.
Yes.
And when it was owned by a guy named Steve Spill at the time, mm-hmm. and he was friends with Henning. And prior to Henning dying, he stored his props at Magicopolis. Mm. I was performing there in 1999, and backstage were those exact props.
Oh, my God.
And I got to do my show and use those props I watched on TV as a kid.
Oh,
and talk about just a full circle of magic. That was just so cool to get to use the guy that you grew up enjoying, watching, got to use his props and just got to memorialize it that way. Yep. I thought that was awesome. That was so much fun.
That is. And you didn't try and put your little brother.
My little brother was safe.
Good.
Okay, he was far away.
Good. Excellent.
I use trained professionals this time.
I'm surprised you'd use a power saw or something.
Right.
Copperfield. Oh, my God. Who are some of your favorite magicians you like to watch today?
Penn and Teller are always fun to watch. I've gone to their show a few times. Fanny's taken me for my birthday, and it's just always a great time. And my favorite part of their act is their bullet catch.
Oh yes, mm-hmm.
because they do such a great job at it, and they're just so entertaining to watch. I just love watching those guys, and then of course, I have a friend named Losander. You know Losander.
Yes. Okay. Yes. His specialty is the levitating table.
Yeah, the floating table. And I've him and I became friends at the magic shop. Mm-hmm. And between me, him, and Shimada, we all became closer because of the magic shop. And here's one reason why. I would have lectures at the shop once a month.
Right.
Right. And I had him booked for, I remember it was September 2nd of that year. I think it was September 2nd. And then he had called me and said, I can't do the lecture that day because he had to go to Germany for something. He said, but I could do it in a week later. I said, okay, no problem. And that was September 10th, I think. And then we ended up doing the lecture, sell out. Shimada was there. We all had a good time. Losander was just doing his table, selling tables, floating tables all over the shop and doing everything he does. And then the very next morning was 9/11.
Oh.
And he couldn't go anywhere. And so we just kind of hung out in LA together for 2 days, and we did shows in people's backyards just to get the cheer and the morale up a little bit. It was me, him, and Shimada just doing magic shows in people's backyards for the heck of it.
How awesome.
And we stayed friends, and him and I turn out we're born the same year within a month apart. So we're the same age. We have a lot of the things that we like to do together. And anytime I went out to Vegas, he even built in his backyard at one point a room for me just because I was there so much. Mm-hmm. And by the time he built the room, then our touring was over and I didn't end up using the room anymore. But Losander, just to pull it all back together, Losander, I love that guy. He's always been a great friend of mine.
Great.
And he's got a theater out in Vegas now that is, it's called the Las Vegas Magic Theater. And he just has shows there, I think. I don't know how many times a night, but a few shows a week. So it's a lot of fun. But I love Losander. He's a really great friend and always been a good supporter.
And Shimada, boy, what an amazing.
I'm telling you.
Oh, he's amazing.
100%. He's real amazing. Deal.
Yeah. Haven't seen him perform quite
even
a while,
even now. I mean, he's obviously, of course, older, 20 years old at this point. Still just putting it out there, no problems, and enjoying it.
Wow. Any other favorite magicians out there?
Let's see. I think that those would be my my tops.
Yeah.
If I had to just pick somebody out there this current today that I'm enjoying and I just enjoy watching.
Losander, his whole routine with that floating table is just totally amazing.
Yeah, and he'll try to teach people how to float it properly because it looks so magical when he does it. Between that table and you've seen his bubble routine,
mm-hmm.
bro. That bubble routine, cool. Just that's the one that when I saw that, I said, I need this guy to lecture at my shop. That was the first time I ever saw him. I was like, nah, this guy's coming to my shop. I'm going to get him for sure. Mm-hmm. He literally holds up a linking ring. He blows a bubble and the bubble goes through the ring and then it stops midair and he just motions with his finger to come back and the bubble comes back through the ring to him and he pops it. I'm like, you son of a.
Yeah.
I said, that was so awesome.
Yep.
I mean,
it's pretty impressive.
Well, I got another question for you too here.
Yeah.
You're also, I don't know if our listening audience has ever heard of the Chucky Perez show.
Yeah.
And you're one of the EPs on that show.
I do help out on the Chucky Perez show quite a bit on different things, like I'll either be a guest on the show. I was an associate producer for one of the shows.
Sorry.
And then he's got another show that he's just started called One-on-One with Chucky Perez. But I've been friends with him because of I was introduced to him through another friend named Isaac that said, hey, this guy would love to have some more entertainment on the show, comedy, magician, things like that. And I went on the show to check it out, and it was a lot of fun. We had a great time. And during that time was the time I was also really getting into the filmmaking portion of my mental, of what I want to do with life. So between that, filmmaking, editing, and things like that, and then trying to go talk to people and then be a magician and go sell a car.
You don't have too much going on, Jeff.
Right.
Today I'm down at NBC Studios. I'm doing this taping of the show. And by the way, if you want to sign that contract for that beautiful Jeep Wrangler, you got to come down to the studio, exactly. Be an audience member. And
Fanny says, I got to be part Jamaican because I have so many jobs.
Jamaican be crazy. That's with all
right.
Those jobs.
That's right. But we love it. You know, I have so much fun, you know, the filmmaking and the editing end of things that I've learned over the last, I'd say 5 or 6 years has just been awesome. It's opened even more doors for me to meet more people have access to people who you wouldn't have access to before. The one thing with magic and filmmaking is where they kind of go hand in hand a bit. They really do open doors to things that you would never have access to before, mm-hmm. meaning people, mm-hmm. actors, Hollywood stars. Magic gets you access to those same people as filmmaking does. Mm-hmm. But magic gets the access even easier. And it's just so crazy how I could show somebody a trick and like, dude, you have to come show this guy this trick. And I'll be in green rooms all of a sudden where all these, like a band will be sitting there for, mm-hmm. and I'll be doing tricks for the whole band. Mm-hmm. And it's just so cool. Where normally you just wouldn't be access to that whatsoever.
Yeah. Wow.
Are you going to be performing anywhere anytime in the near future?
In my house.
We'll all be coming over. Yeah,
until I get better with the chemo.
What time is dinner for the buffet
and exactly right
on the show?
Yeah, just line up the plates. Here we go. Ring the bell. Ding ding ding. Ding. There's a triangle. Ding 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 ding. Dinner's ready. That's
right. Oh my god.
I do a lot of filming at my house, which is crazy. Yeah. I'll empty out a section of my garage to set up all the lights, the cameras, and everything, and I have friends that come over and because now with COVID, they do a lot of self-tape auditions. Mm-hmm. And so I'll go through the script with them and I'll say, here, say it like this, read it like this. Don't make this a question. Make this a statement. Do it like this. Come in. Yeah. And they love it. And it's a lot of fun for me because it just keeps me, like I said, active, which I like.
And I know you're filming this because I'm sure you're going to be doing some editing and some other things. And you'll have it up on YouTube or LinkedIn or Facebook and stuff.
Yeah, this will be a lot of fun too.
Absolutely. Yes.
If we get a chance, if there's some clips, what we'll do is when we post the show, and of course you're listening to the show now, of course, but we'll try to see if we can get a film clip put up on the link because we have the ability to do that through our website.
100%. I will send that to you. That's easy. I just got to play with it. I'll sync both of the videos together and the audio, and it'd be awesome.
That'd be great.
Well, Jeff, you know what I'm saying? It's been an absolute pleasure having you in studio. It's always so much fun when we have somebody in studio.
That's what I was thinking.
I know, because you can look at them.
Because you initially said we could do Zoom. I'm like, I really want to come in because I think that's where you get the best energy.
Yeah.
Okay. And it was only a couple hours drive, so it wasn't a big deal for me. I was like, okay, let's go. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And it's like I'm not doing anything else right now anyway. I'm not working because of stupid cancer.
Well, we got the market. We got Vaughn's down the street here. There you go. Or whatever the market is down the street. Let's go get some groceries and you're going to be cooking lunch here. So.
We didn't tell you that part.
Bing.
Yeah, really. Yeah, bada bing, bada boom.
That's it.
Listen, Jeff, again, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. We really appreciate it. Hopefully have you back again sometime real soon.
I would love it. That would be so much fun.
You are an amazingly talented man in so many different ways, and I love your positive attitude about everything. I mean, that will make you successful in everything you do, including your health.
Agreed, 100%.
So keep doing what you're doing.
We're going to have to come down and see the dealership sometime because we're going to be buying a truck to haul a fifth wheel trailer pretty soon. So I have to come down and see you.
I love a nice fifth wheel. Perfect.
Thank you again, Jeff. All right.
Jeff, a pleasure to have you. And I believe the music is starting to come up. And it sounds like we're at the end of the show.
Another one
done. Tori, a pleasure having you again as my co-host of the show.
Always.
You've been listening to The Good Journeys. We will be back again with a new podcast show real soon. And again, folks, thanks for listening to The Good Journeys. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.